Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
We run several businesses, myself and a business partner. We have three businesses, and then we each have S-Corps.
Okay.
And that's how we get paid. Mm-hmm. And this is where everything starts to get super confusing for me, and I don't know what's happening, and I just let my accountant tell me what to do, and I do that.
Hello, and welcome to Financials Podcast Future Rich. I'm your host, Barbara Ginty, and I'm also a CFP, which is a certified financial planner. And I'm here with my guest today, Sarah. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Sarah, you and I met a long time ago in another lifetime, I would say.
Yeah.
A very long time ago. So why don't you fill myself and our listeners in? So give us the overall summary, like how old you are, where you live, what you do, what you make, all that jazz.
Okay. I am 42. I live in Los Angeles currently. We met in New York about 12 years ago, maybe 12 or 13, 11 maybe years ago. We first met about finances though 10 years ago. I literally have our notes. Our first meeting was June 28, 2014. I have our notes. I could share my screen and show you. Like I have.
That's wild. I'm curious to see. I don't remember. This is like in the very beginning of my personal finance career.
So. I'm so grateful too. And I was married at the time and I'm now divorced. Were advising us on, well, you were advising me on how much we could save on for our retirement and stuff. And I had a student mm-hmm. loan at the time.
Okay.
And that was kind of our only debt. And so since then I've paid off my student loan. So I actually have zero debt.
Oh, it's amazing.
I don't own a house yet. So that's also why I don't have any debt.
So tell us what you do. So you're living in LA, 42. What are you doing for work?
We run several businesses, myself and a business partner. We have three businesses and then we each have S-Corps.
Okay.
And that's how we get paid. Mm-hmm. And this is where everything starts to get super confusing for me. And I don't know what's happening. And I just let my accountant tell me what to do. And I do that.
Okay.
My only question to him had been for the last 7 years, how much can I say put in my retirement accounts, right? Like I want to still contribute to, if I can do a Roth, I want to do a Roth. And I very quickly went out of the bracket for being able to do that.
Yeah, capped out on that.
But I'm not so sure that I am anymore because I looked at my tax return for 2023 and the adjusted gross income was $68,000. While that is not my income.
Yeah, that's not your income. Yeah.
That's the adjusted. And I was like, wait a minute. Cause I Googled it. If my adjusted gross income is that, like, can I still do a Roth? Like now it feels like I'm really like skirting the system in some way. So I don't.
You're single, right?
Yeah.
So you're filing single. Yeah. So the single filing it's modified adjusted gross income, which is not too far off on adjusted gross income, is if you're making over $146,000. But also, you do have a more complicated situation because you have multiple entities.
Yeah.
So did you ask your accountant? Because I would have thought they would have recommended a Roth.
Well, I asked my accountant and he said to talk to a financial planner.
Of course.
Both about this. Well, and also if my adjusted gross income is so low, should I still be? Because I went back to our notes and you were saying, you know, maybe in 2016, you should roll over your contributory IRA, like a regular IRA into my Roth or do a Roth mm-hmm. conversion.
Well,
and I never did it.
Okay.
And I was like, dang, I should have done it. So Because we got divorced. Okay, we went through a divorce and I just forgot about everything.
About it. Yeah, you got busy with life. Okay, so wait, tell me, what are the businesses? I'm just curious.
One is a marketing agency, one is an AI software company, and one is a training company, teaching professionals business development.
Oh, okay. Well, you have your hands full. Okay, so, and then how are you doing retirement? Are you doing, like, so do these companies have employees, or are you sole owner?
Yes.
You're doing a SEP?
The marketing agency has employees, and that agency has been around for a long time.
Did you buy it?
No, my business partner started it himself.
Got it. Okay.
And so that one is more of a traditional business. The other two are maybe just co-owned 50-50. They have contractors, but not W-2 employees. So everyone's 1099 or international, international. So,
but you have business, you have a 50% business.
Uh-huh. Ownership. On everything.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Got it. Okay. And so then what is your account having you do for retirement?
I do an SEP right now.
Yes, you do a SEP.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then so your business partner also does a SEP.
He doesn't. No. I don't know why.
So just you do? Okay. Yeah.
I'm the only one in my world worried about a retirement account. No one in my world seems to care about retirement accounts, right? They're just like, you know, make your millions and then you have your millions. And when you have that, you don't need a retirement account. Like, I get it.
Yeah, that feels risky. Cause like, I mean, I've been talking about retirement. So you heard me talk about it at the very beginning of my career. No one has ever said I have too much money in retirement. I have never heard it ever. If you happen to be saving for retirement, doing it along the way, and then one of your companies hits big, you just stop saving for retirement, right? I don't know.
Right. Right.
I think the reverse is riskier and not a position. And it's just personal preference, but I think the worst position is to assume it's going to hit big, right? And do all the work. And yeah, you can build and sell a company, but also selling a company isn't as easy as it seems, right? And there has to be a market for it. It has to be a certain EBITDA number. You have to find the buyer, right? There's a lot that could go wrong in that universe, 100%. In my opinion, right? And so I think it's riskier to assume you're going to sell it for the number that you want to sell it, in the structure that you want to sell it, because you sell it for $1 million, you're only going to get $500,000 to live on, which is actually really not enough money to fund your whole retirement. So you'd really have to sell it for, like, depending on your lifestyle, a lot more, which means there's more tax ramifications. There's ways to negotiate some of that. Anyway, I think your better situation is just saving along the way. And if one of your businesses sells and does great, well, that's just, you're just done saving for retirement.
Yep, and that's how I've been rolling. And everything I save, I just consider it, even if it's in an individual account, individual investment account, I consider that part of my retirement. Like, I'm
retirement.
I consider that non-touchable money, anything that's in my investment accounts.
Okay, perfect. So you're doing a SEP. I guess it doesn't really matter for the listener's perspective, but you're doing a SEP on, they're all S-corps. So you're taking.
Oh, yeah.
So you're doing a SEP on each of them? Or?
No, I guess just my individual one, my individual S-corp. The others are LLCs. So the three businesses LLCs.
LLCs. And then you have an S-corp, and is that where you fund the income from the LLCs? Is it like
that's where
roll into that S-corp?
That's where I get paid.
Yeah, you get paid to your S-corporation from your other entities. So everything is rolling up into, or rolling, however you want to look at it, rolling down into your S-corp or rolling up into your S-corp. And then in your S-corp, you're the only owner, and then you're funding a SEP. That's why, because normally if you're in a business with somebody and you do a SEP, they have to do a SEP.
Oh,
makes
okay.
sense. You're tethered together as a business owner. It's like a marriage, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that makes more sense.
We also own a house. That's another LLC I forgot to mention. We have four. Okay. The fourth one would be owning a house, 50-50.
Okay. I was like, wait, do you own four houses? Okay. So you have a house. Okay.
It's under an LLC.
Yeah, that's great. Okay. But so then all of your income is flowing through to your S-corp, which you own solely.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. Okay. And then from there, you're funding a SEP, which is the abbreviation is SEP. Okay, perfect. And what are you putting in the SEP each year, approximately?
$10,000.
Okay. And how much do you have in there so far?
The current value is $136,000.
Okay,
fantastic. Of the SEP. But, you know, I'm investing in NVIDIA, everyone. It's a hot stock. So
I can't say anything.
That's why I'm not qualified on any level. So take it or leave it.
So I'm not going to say anything because I can't speak to any individual recommendations. But okay, so you have $136,000 in your SEP. And then what other, do you have other investments as well and other savings?
In my investment account right now, I have $700,000 in my investment account. And that's broken up into a SEP. I have a Roth IRA with $100,000 in it.
Okay.
I have a contributory IRA with $25,000 in it.
Okay.
And then the rest, like $450,000, is in individual investment.
Okay, that you invest.
And so that's all. Mm-hmm. And so that's that. And then I have $50,000 in a savings account, just cash.
Outside of the 700.
Mm-hmm. In like a bank account. Perfect.
Yeah, bank account. Perfect.
I was keeping it $100,000, but I just put 50 into the market recently because I feel like 50 is good enough.
Yeah, 50 is good enough. And it's a high yield savings account. Okay, good. So you're getting paid on it. That's everything. Okay. So then of your breakdown of your 700,000, 450 is
Individual.
Non-retirement.
Yeah.
Individually owned. Okay. Perfect. And then you have 250 in the retirement with the breakdown between the SEP, the Roth, and the traditional IRA is what I would call it when you say contributory IRA.
Right. Yes. Traditional. Yes.
Okay. Perfect. So we have 250 in some retirement vehicle with a breakdown, 450 in an individual investment account, and then you have 50,000 saved in cash. Do you have your numbers about where you were when we talked?
Yes. And by the way, those numbers don't include the house.
Right. The value of the house, which you own 50% of.
Right. And then there's some other businesses I've invested in as well. But those, I count those as like, I don't count them on my sheet. Because what if
balance sheet? Yeah,
yeah. Because if they don't go anywhere, then they're zero. So I just, those are another like wishful thinking type of thing.
Yeah.
So the house would be, I would add, you know, $300,000 to the house for the house
value.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then back to 2014, where we came from to where we are, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, because I was just looking at this recently too, and I was so proud of myself. Okay, so in 2014, our adjusted gross income, and that's two people, was $166,000 that year. Okay. I'm like, do I have my net worth written out though?
Well, you had student loans then.
Yeah. I had $62,000. So I had $20,000 in the Roth IRA.
Okay.
I had $2,000 in the traditional IRA.
Okay.
At that point, and $41,000 in individual investment. That's okay. Where I was. So $62,000 total. 62 to 700.
$750,000 investable and $300,000 in real estate.
Yeah. In 10 years.
In 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you, divorce.
Yeah. Wait, why thank you, divorce?
It allowed me to take moves that I was not allowed to do in the divorce because he was more an amazing person, love him to death, amazing human being, but he was more of a, not scared, but more conservative, Yeah. And I was like, let's take risks. Let's, you know, when the BP oil spill happened, I'm like, let's invest in BP. Like that's going to bounce back. And it's like, no, that's making, you know, things like that.
Okay.
And so there's that, but then there's also jobs I wasn't able to pursue because it's risky. What if it fails? You know, being an entrepreneur, I really wanted to have this entrepreneurial spirit. And it was, if he didn't make money off the bat with him, he was not allowing me to do it.
Not interested. Yeah. Or not wanting you to do it. Yeah. Okay.
Once we got divorced, I was able to spend a few years really hustling and trying to get something to happen here. And within 2 years, all of a sudden now I'm making $250,000 a year. Whereas before I was making 60.
Well, what I say, well, I think is the impressive part is not only did you increase your income substantially, but you obviously increased your savings. And often we talk a lot about this on the podcast is when people increase their income, they normally increase their lifestyle. So like they don't ever see the benefit of the increase on the income because then they just have like a nicer apartment, a nicer car, nicer vacation. And so then they never really get anywhere from a net worth standpoint.
100%.
They have more cash flow, but their expenses increase as their cash flow increases.
And that was top of mind the whole time. the all 10 years, it was top of mind. But, and I did, by the way, increase my lifestyle. One, I mean, I for sure did. And I've been like scared about it. Every time I increase my lifestyle, I get a better apartment or, you know, which is more rent or.
Yeah.
I'm always like, but I never did a lot of, all I did really was when I turned 40, I took a whole year of 3 or 4 lavish vacations and I bought some art. And then I'm like, okay, ready to tone it back down to regular, regular lifestyle. But I was like, at some point I have to live, you know, some point I need to like enjoy this money.
Enjoy the hard work. Yeah. So I think there's an important balance of not getting too caught up in the lifestyle creep, but then also like you work really hard, you should enjoy it as well. There has to be, and it's hard to find a balance, and the balance is different for everybody. Yes, I will say, like,
for sure.
What is the reward for the hard work? Like, is it the lavish vacation or is it like having a house cleaner come once a week? Or, you know, everyone has like a different way they want to spend their money that makes it feel worthwhile.
Yeah.
Well, this is so exciting. It's so funny that I'm glad that my whole like, please save for retirement 10 years ago stuck.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And the only thing I didn't do, I made 2 mistakes, I would say, was I didn't do the conversion from traditional to Roth. I made a really silly mistake recently was I have a credit card, a personal credit card. So my issue has been this S Corp, which is me.
Yeah.
S Corp is me. And so
it's you. Yeah.
But it's a business. And so it's not my personal credit. And so I have this S Corp credit card, which I think of as my credit card. And so, and I've had it forever. And I have this personal though credit card that I don't use. And it was so unused that they shut it down. They closed it. And then I took a huge hit on my credit because they don't have my S Corp credit card on my credit, but that was a new aha moment for me in the last month. And I was like, oh, so stupid. I literally, according to my credit, I don't have any credit cards open. And so my credit score dropped by like 50 points. I was in 800, 810, and then it went down to like 740. I was like, no. And so I opened a credit card and I'm going to give it a few months. And like,
yeah, that's very solvable. That's solvable. That was just an oversight. And you should have a personal credit card so that you're maintaining your credit history.
Yes.
Right? Because part of your credit report is length of time. That's one of the components.
Yes.
So yeah, I would have a personal credit card. And there will be expenses that come up that should probably be on the personal, not the business. But yes, it gets very blurry when you own a business, especially a small business.
Yeah.
Like what's business, what's personal, depending on the industry. But yeah, I would have a personal card that you put some personal expenses on and pay it off just so that you maintain that. That's not that big of a mistake. That's like, that's fine. You weren't going for like a mortgage at the time, right?
Well, I am thinking about that now. And I was like, really right at the exact moment that I'm thinking about a mortgage is when I take this hit on my credit, like so, but it's okay. It's,
you can fix that. That'll, and it takes a while to usually buy a property. So I would imagine you'll be able to bump that back up pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So this is great. You've done a phenomenal job. So we have no debt, which is phenomenal. You have a ton of savings. You have 4 entities. We normally run through like what expenses are, but I have a feeling that if I asked you what your expenses are, it's a little blurry with the business.
Yeah. I just did a rough look at it and I said, okay, like annually, that's basically what I could do for you. I was like, annually, my personal expenses are, was that right? 90K and then the rent on top of that, that didn't include rent. So if I'm spending 90K just to live, so it's like 168 total per year in expenses.
What is your rent a month?
Maybe 6,500. That wasn't included in 90K.
90. Okay.
And then so let's just say it's like 5,500 a month on my credit card. So that's 66.
Okay. So 5,500 on the credit card and then plus the 6,500.
So like 150K a year in expenses.
Yeah. Well, 6,500 plus the 5,500 is 12,000 a month that you need. But some of that's business, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Some of that's getting worked through as a business expense.
Yes.
So it's always a little interesting when you're, as your businesses grow, what are your gross bringing in with your businesses before all the expenses, of which is 5,500? Are you expensing your rent?
Only a third of it, or whatever it is that you do when you work from home.
What are your portion for the home office? And then of the 5,500, you're probably expensing a portion of that, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And I don't know how much, because that's where I just hand everything to my accountant.
Which is exactly the answer I want, to be completely honest with you. Like, there's a reason you have a CPA, right?
Yeah.
You hand it over and you say, like, what can be expense? What category do we put it in? What's
right.
Is it 50 cents on the dollar? I don't, that's their job. So you said you're probably bringing in $250,000 a year?
Yeah.
And then we're writing off. So with all the businesses, when all of your income from the different entities flow through to your S corp, it's around $250,000, and then you're writing it down to $68,000 from a tax return standpoint. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. And then when you're saving, you're doing $10,000 in the SEP, and then are you paying yourself S corp distributions to come up with all that cash?
Yes.
Perfect. The nice thing about an S corp distribution is that you're not paying FICA taxes on that. Did the accountant go over that?
No, I don't even know what a FICA tax is.
Okay, FICA tax is what other people know as payroll tax, right? So you're paying Social Security and Medicare. So the one thing I will tell you, and I don't know that it's necessarily a problem, and as you're in the only camp amongst your peers and colleagues in entrepreneur land that says you should be saving for retirement, and I'll say, no, when the company sells, it doesn't matter about retirement. They're also going to tell you this doesn't matter either. $68,000 is what's being used for your Social Security contribution, right? So
right, yes.
As a business owner, you pay one side and you pay the other side because you're both the employee and the employer. Mm-hmm. And the same with the Medicare, right? So Social Security contribution is 6.2% for yourself as the employee, 6.2% for the employer, which is also you, and then 1.45 for Medicare and 1.45 for Medicare. So you're paying both sides.
Yeah.
So by not paying that, you're saving 15.3%, and that's what is happening with an S corp distribution. Is you owe taxes on that, but it doesn't count towards Social Security and Medicare, which is called FICA taxes. So you save 15.3%. That's why that's super attractive with an S corp. S corp is a flow through entity, so everything's flowing through to your personal return, not like a C corp. What I will warn you about is if you go online and look at your Social Security, so on SSA.gov, you're not going to see the weight. It's not going to reflect 250, right? Because we're expensing down your income, which is totally fine. So we're not paying in as much. Just something to be aware of.
Yeah, I've definitely of the mindset of I will not be earning Social Security. I'm of that mind. Like, I need to fully fund my retirement myself is my mindset.
And so, yeah, you're going to oversave, which is fine. And then we will have Social Security.
Oh, sure. But I'm talking about for myself, like me.
You're not
because
relying
I'm not paying
on
into it.
Yes. Okay. You're going to fund it yourself. Okay. Got it. I just want to make sure, because sometimes business owners forget that by doing that, you're not putting as much in Social Security. So it's a seesaw, right? So if you know that and you're aware that when you go to collect Social Security, it's not going to be as high because you're not putting it all in the books, if you will.
Right.
That's fine as long as you supplemented it. And so
right.
I agree with you. You have a lot saved, so you'll have no problem. I just want to – sometimes the accountants don't go over like, oh,
right.
S-corp distributions don't pay FICA.
Yeah, so. Yeah, 100%.
S-corp distributions, they have to be proportional, right, to ownership usually. So you take them – around the same time, and then you use that and fund the investments.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Perfect. That's great. Taking care of your health isn't always easy, but it should at least be simple. That's why for the last 3 years, I've been drinking AG1 every day with no exceptions. It's just one scoop mixed in water once a day, every day, and it makes me feel ready to take on my day. That's because each serving of AG1 delivers my daily dose of vitamins, minerals, pre and probiotics, and more. It's a powerful, healthy habit that's also powerfully simple. With AG1, I know I'm getting essential brain, gut, and immune health support with vitamins, probiotics, and nutrients from Whole Foods. I like to think of it as my nutritional insurance. I know I'm covering my nutritional bases from the very start of the day. If there's one product I had to recommend to elevate your health, it's AG1, and that's why I've partnered with them for so long. So if you want to take ownership of your health, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase exclusively at drinkag1.com/future-rich. That's drinkag1.com/future-rich. Check it out.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is very unique. I can relate because I have multiple entities, but this is a very unique one from the podcast standpoint. So we won't go down to all the expenses because it's too mixed in together, but I think obviously the businesses are doing well. You're taking the S-Corp distributions to fund the non-retirement savings, which is your best bet, because the only other thing you can consider on the S-Corp is you could do a solo 401k instead of a SEP. I don't know if they mentioned that.
Well, the marketing agency actually offers a 401k. So if I was going to do that, I would probably just do it there.
Are you W-2 at the marketing agency?
So yes, we're all W-2 plus. So it's W-2 plus S-Corp distributions there.
Okay. So yeah, you could, as long as you have to be on payroll to usually be eligible. Is there a match there? If it's a 401k, you have to have, usually you would have probably, I would imagine if you're owners of it, you probably have to have a safe harbor contribution.
Yeah, we went, exactly. We went over with our 401k guy and we just decided not to do it there because it's us. We'd be matching ourselves. And so we're like, we might as well just not.
Because everyone who works there is an owner, because otherwise you're obligated to do it because you have to pass the testing for the 401k for ERISA.
Yeah. So we didn't.
Okay. So you're getting a W-2 from there.
A small one.
Is it enough to contribute the max to
$23,000 to a 401k? Mm-hmm. No, I don't, maybe, but I didn't even think about that.
Okay, so here's what I'm thinking, just so you know where my brain's at. The SEP is allowing you to do 25% of income, right? But we're writing down your income. So your contribution is low for your SEP relative to what you're making. So if you wanted to increase your tax deferred savings, right, your it's a dollar for dollar reduction for you. With a solo 401k on the S Corp, you could do 23,000 versus 10.
Mm-hmm. Okay. He just did 10 because he didn't know what number I should be doing. And he didn't want it to be too much.
Your accountant?
Uh-huh.
He has to calculate it. That's his job.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The advisor doesn't calculate it. We're not allowed to.
Yeah.
So he has to calculate what your contribution on the SEP would be.
Okay.
That one they cannot throw at it. Oh, talk to your financial advisor. That is a hard no. I send that back to the accountants all the time. I say, I do not have the liability protection to calculate the number. I can tell you what it's 25% of self-employment income, but I cannot write the number in or tell you the number.
Okay.
I'm not licensed for it. The accountant is licensed to tell you the SEP contribution amount. That's his job. I would say, though, I would ask, am I better off doing a SEP IRA or am I better off doing a solo 401k? That would be my question if I were in your shoes.
Okay.
Do not let him say like, oh, talk to your financial advisor. No.
Yeah.
He should be able to calculate the SEP number is 12,000 and the solo 401k is 23. Give you both numbers. And okay, well, I'd rather put 23 away than 12.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's just a small tweak. That's like not a major change. That would just be a small tweak. And then you would just have less money going into the non-retirement account, and you'd have just incrementally more going into the retirement, but it is tax deferred and tax sheltered, which I think as you continue to grow your income, because I would imagine that's the goal, then at least you have one vehicle that's growing tax deferred, which I think is advantageous as your income grows.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
One small tweak. And a solo 401k will be a little bit easier than the 401k and the marketing agency, because you have partners in there and it gets a little more complicated.
Yeah.
On a bigger plan versus a solo. If that makes sense. Okay.
Yeah. I'll for sure ask him about that.
Okay. You have to calculate the SEP number. I send it back to accountants every time at tax time. They're like, oh, my accountant said you need to tell me how much you can put in the SEP. And I'm like, I'm not licensed for that, but your accountant is.
Right.
I don't know why. There's like this hot potato game, and it's like, oh no, it's your attorney. And the attorney's like, no, no, it's your CPA. And the CPA is like, no, no, it's your financial advisor. And like, nobody wants to take ownership. And then what are your questions? What questions do you have around your finances?
So can I contribute to a Roth IRA? And then should I right now convert my contributory IRA, or the traditional IRA, into a Roth? Now I need to remember. Roth I've already paid taxes on.
Correct. So yeah, Roth, you've already paid tax.
Can you convert an SEP into a Roth? I would imagine no.
You technically, and don't quote me on this, I would want to review the rules, but I think you have to make it, I think it needs to go from a SEP to a traditional IRA and then a traditional to a Roth. I would actually have to check. It's the same type of money, so I don't know if you can do it all in one transaction. It probably depends on who's holding it. But yes, SEP is all pre-tax, so in theory could be converted to Roth. That's why I also would look at the solo 401k, because you might be able to do that all as a Roth.
The solo 401k as a Roth?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Yeah. I think you can do that all as a Roth. The SEP is pre-tax, right? So.
Right.
It is what it is. With the 401ks, you have options to do Roth contributions. So that's one reason it's like interesting as well.
Yeah.
So with the conversion, we go off modified adjusted gross income, not adjusted gross income, but they vary slightly. So if your tax return says $68,000, I don't see any reason why you can't do a Roth.
Right.
If that's what your income is getting written down to. I honestly do think it should be the accountant that tells you whether or not you do that.
Yeah.
Because they're the ones that have to file it on the return.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe you can, but I would say I believe, and you need to confirm with your CPA without looking at the tax return, that yes, your income, your modified adjusted income is below the Roth threshold. They're the ones signing the return, right? So it's their licensing. And then I would also ask, because you're in the state of California, this is going to be a factor of like where you think you're going to be tax-wise. But so I'll give you the federal number. So single filer for 2024 with $68,000 of income is in the 22% bracket. Federally, that is your marginal rate, not your effective rate. So your effective rate maybe will be closer to, I don't know, 18 to 20% probably federally. And then you're going to have state tax. So if you wanted to convert it, that's what you're going to be paying, but you do have the cash to pay it. And so I guess my question to you would be, where do you think your income is going to be? Do you foresee it being consistent and having a taxable income, let's just say, of 70? Or do you see it going up? Like, where do you predict, if you had to take a guess?
For this year, I predict it being the same.
Okay. And then what do you think in the next 5 to 10 years, where do you?
Probably either same or increasing.
So if you think it's going to be the same or increasing, because you have 25,000 in the traditional IRA?
Yes, right. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I don't know that I would do the whole thing. You're going to owe a good chunk of change. You can take it out. You have the cash to do it. You could start, if you think you're going to be comparable income next year, you could do like half of it now, half of it next year. And I would assume you're going to owe, I don't know where you fall state-wise, but so let's just assume you're going to be federally at 20%. And because you're under 59.5, you want to pay the tax bill out of the cash, not out of the account. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So if you could have converted 12 $1,500, you'd owe approximately federal, because I'm not a CPA, around $2,500.
Mm-hmm.
You do that over 2 years, and then you get rid of the traditional IRA, and then you put that all in the Roth. So you get the Roth up higher. And then if you wanted to, writing down your income, right, then I would look at the solo 401k and see if you can do that all as Roth. And then you're right, jumping $23,000 a year in, and we're not worried about the, you know, $6,000 contribution instead, right?
Yes.
Let me just see. But that's what I would do. Yeah, you can do a Roth solo 401k.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would do. Because okay, that's a bigger bang for your buck. Now you're doing $23,000. I would convert the traditional. So you now have no more traditional. Well, you have the SEP.
Yeah.
So you could do, you could start doing the SEP incrementally too. You convert that to a traditional if you need to. I'm doing the paperwork, but we'll just say it's a traditional.
Should I convert it, or should I just wait and not convert it? And because when you take it out, when you're 65, let's say, won't my tax burden at that point be ridiculously low?
It depends.
And we don't know, like, assuming I'm 65 right now, you know, like the taxes don't change, assuming they don't change.
They could be the same, right? So,
okay.
Like if you're having a good retirement, what I'll say right now is, depending on how your income is structured, like you're not going to have I have some people that have pensions that like don't pay state tax. So they're just paying federal. And if you're having a good retirement, you generally are paying taxes in retirement, right?
Because
mm-hmm. Your income's all in the book. So you don't have a business in retirement. You can't write things down. You can't expense part of your rent. You know, stuff like that is gone.
Mm.
If you're fully retired, you're mm-hmm. doing a really good job with the breakdown between, and this is the benefit of being a business owner. Because as we haven't talked about it, but there are downsides to being a business owner too. And it's not easy, is you're going to have a lot in non-retirement assets. And so all of that will be taxed at capital gains rate, which is very efficient, right? Mm-hmm. We'll just, it's over a year, obviously, when you're in retirement. So that's all very tax efficient from a distribution standpoint. Those will be capital gains mm-hmm. for the most part. I kind of like the idea because you have the cash flow. And as we talked about, you haven't increased your lifestyle. So you could afford, in my opinion, to pay for the conversion. If you do it incrementally, it won't be that painful.
Mm-hmm.
Cash isn't making a ton, right? It's making something, but your investments are making way more than the cash, mm-hmm. if you think about it from that standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
So if you bite the bullet and you start converting at least the traditional and get that done in 2 years, you can then evaluate if you want to do the SEP or just leave it. What I would do, since you don't really need a huge, you're already writing down most of your expenses, so I don't think you're only doing $10,000 in the SEP. I would switch that and do the solo 401k.
100%. Yeah, totally. I'm so excited.
Because then when you get to the future, then you have a lot of money in Roth and mm-hmm. a lot of money in non-retirement. And non-retirement is very valuable because you can lend against it.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked about this in the last few shows. You can collateralize that. You can't collateralize retirement. Even though there's no taxes owed on the Roth, I don't think they'll lend against it because it's technically under our retirement system.
Mm.
So then you have a ton in Roth, a ton in non-retirement. And then if you leave the SEP alone, then you have like a little kitty of money that's taxable that you can do what you want with it. But mm-hmm. I would focus on that. Since you're writing down enough of your expenses with the business, I don't think you need that $10,000 in the SEP isn't making or breaking you.
I agree. And I'm going to do both of those things. So I'm going to convert half of the traditional this year, half next year. And then I'm going to talk to my accountant about, I'm just going to confirm with him though, that I could do the solo.
You can do, I would just do, yeah, solo 401k, but do mm-hmm. it Roth and do it on mm-hmm. your S-Corp.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Yeah.
Because
I'm so excited.
Yeah, you'd have the income to show for it. Versus the SEP is only 25% of the income, so you're not able to do as much. Yeah, that's what I do. I would type it all up to the account and be like, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do a Roth conversion and this amount. I estimate the federal liability to be, I would do 20%. What do you think I'm going to owe total state and fed? They should be able to tell you. If my income is the same as this year, as last year, what does that liability look like? So you can plan for that. And then I would say, I want to switch from doing a SEP on the business to a solo 401k that's all Roth. Yeah, and that's how I would proceed. I think that would be a good tax situation too.
Mm-hmm.
And then you mentioned you do a little bit of investing, and this is just purely educational, but you decided to keep the SEP and convert the SEP to traditional IRA, and then you also have the Roth IRA, you know you can do self-directed traditional and Roth IRAs.
No.
What that means is, let's just say we own mutual fund ABC, right? Because I can't speak to anything specific. So mutual funds, and you can go online and buy it, right? And so that's in your Roth IRA. But you decide that there's a company that came to you that you think is really interesting, and they ask you to invest in them. You can do that in your Roth.
Oh, yeah. Because that's what I have. I have those two businesses that I invested in, each at 25K, let's say, as a like round Series A investor or whatever. And I did not do it from a retirement account. And I could have. I should have done it from my Roth. What am I thinking, right?
Well, here's what I'll tell you. It's not that easy, right? You have to have a third party entity. Well, you, in theory, probably don't have time to do it yourself. But yes, you have to create a self-directed Roth IRA. It's a different vehicle than the regular Roth IRA because you have to have the capacity to have a bank account to write to that company, right? Because you can't just go online and buy it. It's private. But yeah, anyway, that is a feature. So that would be to me the argument of like maybe keeping the SEP IRA. You can't take a tax loss if it's in there, but also if it does well, there's no gain. It's sheltered. So there's pros and there's always pros and cons, right? So that's why no situation is the same. What's right for you is not going to be right for somebody else. But just so you know how it works, there are options with that where you can invest differently inside of your retirement accounts if you want to and you're willing to pay to structure it that way.
That's so interesting. You said that it's like tax sheltered.
So IRAs and Roth are tax sheltered, meaning that every year you don't get a tax document, right?
Yeah.
It's in the account and you don't pay till you take a distribution.
Right, right. Interesting. Okay.
Just something to keep in the back of your mind as you're continuing to be an entrepreneur and build your own companies and invest in other companies. Just something to keep in mind.
Do I talk to Schwab about that? Like if all my money's in a Schwab?
No, they will not. Any company that you're familiar with doesn't do it. There are specialty companies that offer this. It's a specialty.
Okay, got it. Yeah. Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. It's a specialty company. There's different types of reporting on it, as you can imagine. So you'd want to pick a company that their specialty is self-directed retirement accounts.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, that's good to know about. Thank you.
Yeah, just have in the back of your head. It obviously, with anything in our industry or anything with law, it takes a long, not fast. So if it's something you think you might be investing, this is, I would get familiar with that if you think that that would fit and be aligned with what you would want to do.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm sure since you're in the entrepreneurial land, there'll be somebody that's doing it in your group. It's not talked about a lot, but it's available.
Interesting.
Really interesting, right? There's more rules around it than there used to be, but there was, I'll have to link it for the show notes. I'm blanking on the name now here, but it was a famous individual and he owned shares of a company in his Roth. And then when it went IPO, it was worth tons of money and owed no tax.
That's what I'm kicking myself already over the, over what I've done so far. The last thing I will ask about or throw your way to see if you have any insight is I'm looking to buy a house in my area. You know, the house is going to have to be a $2 million house. First time house.
LA is crazy.
It'll be a two bedroom, one bath, $2 million house for sure. I've already looked on Zillow. It's hilarious. I know. If my income technically is $68,000,
there's no way they're going to give you a mortgage. I'm sorry.
And I know. And so I'm like, how can I buy a house?
You're going to have to increase your income on the book. Yeah.
Or increase income on the books. Yeah.
And they're going to want like probably more than like a couple months of increased income.
Oh yeah. I was thinking years.
Yeah. Self-employment, they don't like to lend. It's not that you can. I have two mortgages, but the underwriting as a self-employed person is intense.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's intense because they love W-2. Mm-hmm. They want to see your W-2, your offer letter, and that you're making this amount of money every month, every 2 weeks. They like consistency. They don't like any risk. and yeah. self-employed
well,
people.
As if people can't be fired. That's
risk.
The funniest thing. Like, I send these offer letters to banks all the time. I'm like, I'm about to fire this person. What are you, this bank is stupid for, you know, like, it makes no sense.
No, but, I agree. Yeah, they have their process. If you're W-2, yeah, they look at your debt to income ratio.
Yeah.
And then with self-employed. Yeah. And also, this is always interesting with entrepreneurs. If you're doing well, usually have a lot of cash in the bank, and they don't care. If you're asking them for their money, they don't care if you have the same amount of money in the bank. Then you should use yours.
Mm-hmm.
So the trick is to retire. Yeah, so it doesn't matter. So I've had clients who have sold businesses that have $1 million in cash in the bank, but they don't want to use their money, right? They want to use the bank's money. And they are a proven entity for being an entrepreneur. They clearly know how to make money. And the bank is like, no, you don't have enough W-2 or enough self-employment income. We don't care what your balance sheet looks like.
Right.
We don't care that you have $1 million. Because if you have $1 million sitting in your savings account, well, why don't you use your money? Why are you using my money? Is the way the bank views it.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah. So they're not going to look at your balance sheet and be like, wow, look at all of the money she saved over the last 10 years and look at how much her businesses have grown. They're going to be like, where's your W-2?
Mm-hmm.
Or show us your income, and then we'll lend against your, they're really lending against your income. They're not lending against your balance sheet. So what I will say is, though, you do have a lot that's individual. You can lend against that. They can collateralize that. So, and I don't know if you can lend against the entities your share to come up with cash, because what you could do is come up with cash, buy it, and then put a mortgage on it, right? Once you've purchased it.
Yeah, that's what we're thinking. Because so the house we have is, we paid cash for it in the LLC. So I'm like, we could get a mortgage on that house.
And we could
get a loan. So
correct.
That's how we're going to have to buy it, huh? We're going to have to get all these different loans on other things.
You're going to have to, other tangible assets.
Yeah.
So you can let, you'll probably, usually I only recommend doing 50%, especially if you said you have a, if you have concentrated positions, they will lend less because it's higher risk, generally speaking, but usually lend around 50% of a non-retirement account. Sometimes they'll lend more, but it has to be diversified.
Okay.
Just to give you a benchmark on how much you can lend against. And depends on where your money's held. Not all institutions do lending against investments. Yeah.
All right. So like the max loan I'll get is like $250,000 for my individual. Yeah. That's what you're saying.
Yeah. It has to be diversified. Like if there's concentrated positions in there, they're more hesitant.
Right.
Depends on who you're using for lending. But I work with some of the top lenders. And so generally we land around 50 for diversified portfolios. And then the rates are going to be high, right? Just like you're going to, if you take a mortgage, it'll be fixed on your other property. But if you do like a home equity line of credit, it's variable. And same with the lending against investments, it's a variable rate. So they're going to be higher.
Yep.
But you can close them out easier.
Right. Oh man. Okay. Well, that's the next few years of my life is trying to figure that out.
So I would still do the Roth because I think long-term that's going to be good. And you could always use that as an investment vehicle with the caveat is if the business is great, no taxes, business tanks, you get no write-off, you get no loss to write against, right? So that's your pro and con list there, but I would keep accruing cash. Yes. Because I do think when you go to buy a house, either your income needs to be higher or you're going to need to fund it yourself.
Yep.
Most likely.
Mm-hmm.
There is such thing called hard lending. Are you familiar with hard lending?
No.
You could do that. I would stick to the more traditional options, like lend against your non-retirement, keep building that up, and then take a mortgage out on the existing, and then take a mortgage out when you buy it, and then pay off the other mortgage is what I would probably do. But you could look into hard lending. It's another type of lending. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yep. Okay.
I would start planning for that now because that is going to be more of a process as a self-employed person.
Yeah, exactly. Hence why I reached out to you. That's all of this.
Unless you want to like go get a job for like a year so you can qualify for a mortgage and then quit.
So funny.
Yeah, I know. It's I run into this all the time with entrepreneurs. You're like, well, I have the money. I'm like, I know, but the bank wants you to use your money then. They don't want to give you money unless you have the income.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the way around it, is like come up with the cash using lending on other assets and then pay it off when you get a mortgage. Once you're in, you can go get a mortgage.
Interesting. I love it. That's how we're going to have to do it. We're going to have to figure that out.
Okay, perfect. Well, this was super interesting. I appreciate you coming on. I'm so excited for how much you've grown your net worth since I met with you 10 years ago.
I'm so excited also to, I wanted to brag and show you, like, a humble brag, you know, like, what you can be proud of me. Like, look at where I've come, because you really helped us back in the day, you know, get started on this path. And so I'm very grateful.
Well, it makes me so happy because I, you know, you never know. Sometimes I feel like I leave and I'm like, oh man, they probably hate me. I was like, save, let's save more.
Yeah,
get out of my house.
I'm like, yes, let's save more. Woohoo! I love it. It's my favorite thing in the world. Oh my God, I see this question. What should our retirement goal be? Back from 2014, I asked you, what should our retirement goal be?
What did I say?
I think I said 5 million question mark. And then we probably decided on around 5 million. But I think we got more into what we should save. I think we were saving $3,000 a month for 30 years, and then you'll have $5,000 at retirement. So that's what we kind of talked about.
Okay.
Yeah, I want $5 million for retirement, and then I'll feel like I'm good.
Yeah, that'll pay you $200,000 a year, roughly. Mm-hmm. I think it's great.
Yeah.
I have a feeling you might have more, but we'll have to check in again. Maybe not in a decade.
Yeah. Well, I hope that's from your mouth to God's ears, as they say.
Okay. Well, amazing. I appreciate you coming on. For all of our lovely listeners, if you like the show, please follow and subscribe. And as always, if you could share with a friend, we'd really appreciate it. And you can follow us on Instagram for most up-to-date information, which is Future Rich Podcast. Time for our disclaimer. The opinions voiced in this podcast are for general information only and not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. All performance references are historical and do not guarantee future results. Make sure that you consult with your own legal, tax, and/or financial advisor before making any decisions.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.